SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, we're back on Fantasy Sports today on Sports Grid. Now, as we get into the DH position here, we're just going to kind of run through this because, let's be honest, a lot of these players have qualifications at other positions. They're not just DH only. In fact, there's very few of those players. But Davis, Ohtani is that one. So I guess let's start there. He's not going to pitch this season, as we said, so you don't have to really be concerned as to moving him in and out of lineups or these screwy rules that these fantasy operators have. He's just going to hit. Where are you willing to take him, Davis, this year? Are you willing to take him inside the first round of fantasy baseball drafts? Or you prefer take him a little bit later? The best comparison, I think, that has been given for a player like this now that he's not pitching anymore is probably David Ortiz. Like, you pretty much went into every year thinking, okay, I'm not going to be able to play Ortiz anywhere except for DH. There was some school of thought as, I don't want to clog that spot. I want to be able to move guys in and out. But then Ortiz every year would make those people look dumb, right? Like, this guy went on to play, you know, forever and hit 30, 40 home runs every year at DH, and he's in the Hall of Fame now. And Ohtani's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame too, I would guess. Where are you willing to make that selection with him?
So I think the David Ortiz example is a good one, because Ortiz never even – it's actually so insane looking at his numbers. When he was 40 for Boston – he led Major League Baseball in RBIs. He led Major League Baseball in doubles. He hit 315 with 38 home runs. He drove in a bunch of runs. He scored a bunch of runs, obviously. So Ohtani can do all of that. He can totally earn first-round value as a hitter. In fact, he has earned first-round value as a hitter. He led baseball, and he led the American League in home runs last year. He led the American League in OBP. He also stole 20 bases, won MVP last season. Of course, he won MVP in 2021 as well. Finished second in MVP in 2022. For my money, probably should have beaten Aaron Judge, but Aaron Judge got the home run record. So whatever, it is what it is. I mean, I'm totally willing to take him in the first round because this is my supposition. My guess, Craig, is that Shohei Ohtani is going to be even better as a hitter this season without having to mess with pitching at all, doesn't have to think about it, doesn't have to practice it. All the guy has to do is take his hacks in the batting cage. And I also wonder, age 29 season, he knows he's not pitching, doesn't have to risk the injury. Why wouldn't he run more, right? I mean, clearly he's good at it. Last year he stole 20 bases, got caught stealing 6 times. But what is the limiting factor for him stealing? Why can't this guy try and go 40-40? Like, if you told me that Ohtani told, you know, Japanese reporters, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to try and go 40-40 this season, I'd be like, well, yeah, of course he did. Like, the guy has to give himself a challenge this year as a new member for the Los Angeles Dodgers. I think, obviously, I love Shohei Ohtani. I think he's really phenomenal. But I do think all of his energy on hitting is clearly going to be a win.
Yeah, look, and again, a lot of drafts he is going top 10. It's just his ADP is just right outside that. And I guess if you said he qualified at first base, I don't think he's going to play that this year, by the way, but if he qualified at first, Davis, he's probably like a top 5 pick in fantasy. That's the only thing sort of holding him back a little bit is just the fact that he only can go in your util spot or your DH spot. Here are some other players, too. We discussed Judge, Jose Ramirez played some DH, so did Yordan Alvarez. As I said, a lot of these players qualify to other positions, so it's not really a true DH discussion. And really, no fantasy league has just DH. They do have utility spots. Beyond that, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Adley Rutschman, Manny Machado, Christian Yelich, William Contreras. I'm going to keep going, Sam. Josh Lowe. Paul Goldschmidt, Kyle Schwarber, Yainer Diaz, George Springer. I mean, they all play other positions for you in fantasy, so I don't want to make this exclusive to the DH. But, Davis, I would just throw it back to you, basically saying, is there anyone we didn't discuss at this point that you like in particular?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we actually did kind of go past Yordan Alvarez when we were talking about the top of outfield, because I guess his level of performance, we just have become so used to it. He basically has been the exact same guy for each of the last three seasons. He hits between 31 and 37 home runs, between 95 and 105 RBIs, and he is going to obviously score a bunch of runs. He did not score as many runs last year. I don't really know what that is about. He does have that knee issue that will limit him. You know, there will be a 15-day span or a 20-day span where you do not have access to his statistics for some point. But he actually has decreased his strikeout numbers since he has come, since he got called up at his age 22 season in 2019. Very rarely, Craig, are you going to find a guy who can hit 35, 36, 37 home runs and strike out only 18% of the time. He also had a 13.9% walk rate exactly in 2022 and 2023. I think the preponderance of evidence suggests that he is actually probably like an insanely good hitter who maybe has just been limited by injury a little bit in terms of total, plate appearances. And I think if I was going to pick one of these guys, Alvarez, Harper, Vlad, Rutschman, William Contreras, Paul Goldschmidt, if I was going to pick one of these guys to just kind of randomly have a 50 home run season where they, you know, drive in 110 runs and they score 90 runs and they hit 283 and help you win your league, I mean, it's definitely Yordan Alvarez to me, because he also plays in that crazy good lineup. The Astros, we also know, will be, look, they will, if there's an in-season move to be made that makes it 3% more likely for them to win the World Series, I mean, we know the Houston Astros will be aggressive in doing that. So I do really like buying on Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah, I mean, look, their one move this offseason was Josh Hader, which is really interesting because a lot of folks didn't see that happening at the beginning of the season. They already had a closer in Ryan Presley, but having some injuries, Verlander starting the season on the IL, it looks like Urquidy's out. Who knows if they end up with Snell or not, but you're right. The offense is really not much of a question for them. I guess beyond that at DH, you have guys like Naylor, who played a lot of first base last year for Cleveland. You also have, but he plays DH too. You also have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Davis. I would guess Vladimir Guerrero Jr. probably ends up at DH soon too, right? Like, you're going to get him at first still, but for how many years longer? Like a dynasty league, I think you got to start thinking about that probably.
I would assume that we are fairly close to the end of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at first base. Because remember, he came up as a third baseman. Yeah. Actually, that was his original position. He was not particularly strong at that. Moved over to first base. And the Blue Jays actually do have it now in 2024. They've got a couple other guys who actually do play first base that are better defensively and can kind of hold themselves up at the plate. So yeah. For Dynasty, I bet that's coming pretty soon.
All right, let's take a quick timeout here on Fantasy Sports Today. More to come, including a look at the NBA and our daily fantasy lineups to set. So stay with us as we continue on FST right after this.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid. It's time now to take our look at the daily fantasy slate in the National Basketball Association here on this Saturday, Davis. And to me, oh boy, this looks like a big slate tonight. A lot of choices to make here. Looks like I'm looking at 9-10 games, I think, on the slate tonight. And fortunately, it looks like maybe we are avoiding a few injuries here because of the slate. But the problem I see is that a lot of the bigger names are playing tonight. So hard for us to really give a full idea as to who to play, but our goal is to at least educate you on the slate, give you the pricing, give you some players that Davis likes, and then, certainly make sure before tip you put the players in who are playing and you take the players out who are not.
Yep, that's just the name of the game in the NBA this season. DraftKings also has been, they've been doing this relatively interesting thing. I don't know how I feel about it, but they have not been including the late games in many of the NBA slates, so maybe that makes things a little bit easier for you. Maybe that makes things a little bit more difficult for you. But we, the NBA has a 10-game slate here on Saturday. But here on DraftKings, we only have six. We have Brooklyn at Indiana, Charlotte at Philadelphia, Portland at New Orleans, Oklahoma City at Memphis, the Washington Wizards for producer Sam at the Chicago Bulls, and the Golden State Warriors who are traveling to play against the Lakers. To kind of give you the lay of the land here, we've got a bunch of Q tags. I would expect Anthony Davis and LeBron James to play. I would expect Lonzo Ball, Steph Curry, Jaren Jackson Jr., Desmond Bane, Anthony Simons to all not play. In terms of injuries that I think could go either way that are very important to pay attention to, Coby White for the Chicago Bulls, if he does not play, that's going to be one of the bigger injuries to deal with. If Tobias Harris and Denny Avdija do not play, those are going to lead to direct situations that we're going to want to alter our lineup for in NBA DFS tonight. But we got some good games. I mean, Golden State, Los Angeles, Craig, that's probably a preview of the 9-10. The 9-10 play-in game in the Western. Wow. I can't believe it. The 9-10 play-in game in the Western Conference, LeBron James versus Steph Curry. I guess the NBA getting what they want, because that'll be the most watched game, I bet, of the entire NBA season if it does end up happening.
We still have a few weeks, though, right? Like the season's still 3 weeks left. Is that right? Or less?
Yeah. No, look, there definitely is time. I would say that it is getting early pretty late for those teams, particularly because the Lakers have gotten swept by the Sacramento Kings, so they don't have any of the tiebreakers there. They immediately lose. They immediately lose those tiebreakers. But the Warriors are four games behind the Mavericks in the eighth spot. The Lakers are two games back, and they're all way too far away from the Kings. None of them will catch up with. I guess maybe if these teams lost like two games the rest of the way, it would be possible, but We are probably looking at Steph Curry and LeBron James in the 9-10 play-in game in the Western Conference, which is wild.
That is unexpected, but again, the Lakers play with fire like this every year, and somehow they end up coming out of it. I mean, Kawhi Leonard's been hurt for the Clippers. I mean, maybe a couple of wins gets them there. Minnesota has some injuries, too. All right, so here's the lineup that Davis is going to set. Now, full transparency, Davis is much better at this than me. So I'm the assist guy here. I get him the ball, and then Davis scores. But I can read lineups. I can do that. All right, so Scoot Henderson, 5,400 for Portland. Dennis Schroeder for Brooklyn, 6,300. Trey Murphy III on New Orleans, 6,100. Davis has got a mini stack here of Washington with Kyle Kuzma and Bilal Koulibaly. Chet Holmgren at the center position for OKC at 7,400. And Vasily Micic. David told me his pronunciation before the show. Still got it wrong. 5,900 for Charlotte tonight. So I will tell you my opinion of this lineup without looking deeper into it. You know, Chet Holmgren, obviously I know him. Scoot Henderson, I know him. This seems like a young lineup for you. And it also seems like a lineup without like the megastars here. Like no big, huge names. Is that just because of the load management stuff? Or do you just not like the pricing on some of the big guys today?
It's more a function of the slate. You know, Jokic is not on the slate. Giannis is not on the slate. The two Lakers guys, Anthony Davis and LeBron James, are priced up. Now, if things do break a certain way, so like let's say, for example, Coby White does not play tonight for the Chicago Bulls, and let's say that Anthony Simons just straight up doesn't play for Portland, so they're down to like minimum guys. You know, it's the way it kind of works in NBA DFS is it's always a little bit a function of not only who is available, but who is not available, because you kind of need a $3,800 guy here and a $4,300 guy here to make it work. I would love to play Davis and James here in this spot, but wasn't able to make it work on my first run through. Now, also, I am playing Chet for Oklahoma City instead of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander because of those salary reasons. But obviously, if you can get to Shai, that is what you want. So let's go ahead and get into the lineup. Starting at point guard, we have got Scoot Henderson, who has, you know, he just, it's not quite gotten there for him. He's actually coming off one of his better fantasy games of the season, 31 fantasy points against the Knicks in only 26 minutes. You might be saying, why is this guy only playing 26 minutes a night? I thought they took him number two overall. Well, you know, it's kind of just the way that it has gone. They don't fully trust him. They are playing Delano Banton as their backup point guard some. They are playing Keegan Murray's little brother, Chris, as their backup shooting guard. Matisse Thybulle is getting some minutes there. But Malcolm Brogdon is out right now, and Anfernee Simons is a legitimate questionable. So I think we might see Scoot just straight up start at point guard tonight. But in general, I kind of like the variance here. I think that Scoot is a bad matchup for the Pelicans in the backcourt. Dennis Schroeder, I mean, this one is pretty straightforward. I think he is underpriced for the pace of this matchup. Schroeder plays 34, 35, 36 minutes a night for the Brooklyn Nets. He's not a particularly great shooter, but he kind of just makes everything work on offense. He's been averaging over 32 fantasy points per game as a member of the Brooklyn Nets, so a little bit underpriced here. Trey Murphy III is probably the most important player in the NBA playoff race that no one has heard of. He is shooting 39% from three. Without looking, if most people guessed where the New Orleans Pelicans were in the Western Conference playoff race, they would probably guess, oh, they're in the play-in. You know, they're the seventh seed. Zion, he's hurt. And then, nope. The Pelicans not only are fifth, but they're probably going to overtake the Clippers. They have the tiebreak over the Clippers, and they have the most home games left of any team in the Western Conference for the remainder of the season. And I think Trey Murphy and his three-point shooting have been a huge part of that. He doesn't start. He closes most games. In fact, they just have not been using Jonas Valanciunas in the second half of games. They just plant him on the bench. He starts the game and then doesn't play anymore. Kyle Kuzma here at power forward. I mean, Kuzma, you know what you're getting. Kuzma is going to shoot 18 times. He is going to get 7 to 11 rebounds. He's going to make one of the dumbest plays you have ever seen at some point. And that, you know, but he's got a very good matchup against the Bulls. We have our boy Bilal Coulibaly, who actually was Victor Wembanyama's teammate in France. He's starting. Again, not a guy who is shooting particularly well, but getting a ton of minutes and contributing in every category. And Denny Avdija might not play tonight. We have Alex Caruso for the Bulls and my guy Vasily Micic starting at point guard for the Hornets. The other night, he almost had a triple-double. So that is what we are doing for NBA DFS tonight, Craig.
All right, there you go. And is there DFS for college hoops this year? Have you even dove
big
into
time.
That at all or no? Oh, there is.
Big time. There is. I am not an expert enough to I will be doing it once the tournament starts, but it is a grind.
Okay, fair enough. By the way, we have college basketball starting here. I want to mention here. Let me just pull up my trusty schedule here. I don't mind looking down at you guys so you can see me here. Okay, first game being played today, folks, is starting at 1 p.m. Eastern. It's St. Joe's and VCU, followed by Wisconsin, Purdue, and Mississippi State, Auburn. Kevin Walsh has previews of those games coming up in 40 minutes. Yeah.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today on Sports Grid. Here on the show, we play a little game of true or false. But as we've been doing for several years now, I'm trying to think how long we've been doing fantasy reality. The truth be told, by the way, there is actually a story behind this, is that, Davis, I did steal this idea, this fantasy reality idea, from somebody else. I stole it from me in a previous life, in a previous show on SiriusXM. So it was my idea anyway. Now everybody steals it. Everyone does. Before all these debate shows, Davis, I was doing this beforehand I was doing it. But anyway, let's ask some questions here. Sam put them together. We say true or false. It's fantasy or reality. Over on the FanDuel Sportsbook, for those of you who are getting ready to bet on the baseball season, we gave some futures, some season win totals. We're going to review one of them in particular. Now, the good news for the Braves is Ronald Acuna Jr. Was back in the Braves lineup yesterday as the designated hitter. And my guess is if this goes well, he gets to play the outfield a little bit next week before opening day begins for the Braves on March 28th. Naturally, he's coming off one of the most historic seasons we've seen in baseball, winning the MVP. But going back-to-back MVPs, look at the history of baseball. This does not happen very often. In fact, it's almost impossible especially in the NL. Fantasy reality, Davis. Ronald Acuña Jr. at 5-1 over on the FanDuel Sportsbook wins it. Back-to-back MVPs. Fantasy reality.
Man, I think that the overwhelming probability, like I agree with the way that the market has it. You know, like I don't think there's anyone that you should make favored over him. But you're right, it's so hard to do back-to-back. I also think, and I'm wondering if you agree with me on this, that the Dodgers are going to be the story of the season and not the Atlanta Braves, that you know, most of the mainstream media, you know, non-baseball centric, but when First Take and Sports Center and all of these shows are talking about baseball, it's not going to be about the Braves, who are probably going to be just as good. You know, they're going to win 98 games, and Spencer Strider maybe will be the NL Cy Young, and you know, maybe they'll get something out of Kelnick, maybe they won't, but it's all going to be Ohtani and Glasnow and all of those acquisitions. This is the easiest reason why Ronald Acuña Jr. won't win MVP, which is that the guy who actually is the best player in baseball went from the American League to now the National League in Shohei Ohtani, so that takes a bunch of the win equity out of the pool. I got fantasy. Ronald Acuña Jr. will not repeat as National League MVP.
It was interesting during the season last year, there were people who thought that Acuña wouldn't win the MVP because his teammate Matt Olson would potentially steal votes away. And Olson also finished near the top in MVP voting. So that theory is sort of debunked, which tells you for anyone that says that Ohtani can't win the MVP because of Mookie Betts, or Mookie Betts can't win the MVP because of Freddie Freeman, and we could just do this dance and go all around with all of these players. But I'm with you. I just think it's not a fun market to bet at 5-1. Like, really? Like, I don't know. I feel like you can find a 10-1, take a stab at someone there on FanDuel or DraftKings. That's not to say that Acuña can't do it. I also have to be honest. Look, if he's got some knee issues flaring up now, who's to say this doesn't happen again? It may not affect his overall numbers. I still think for fantasy purposes, he's the number one overall pick in the draft. But to win the MVP, I think I'd probably go deeper into the market. So I will say fantasy. All right, now let's move over to Shohei Ohtani. His goal was to be back for opening day. At this point, Davis, I don't see any reason why that can't happen. They're going overseas. He's on the trip right now. So in all likelihood, he is going to play in those games and then come back and play at the beginning of the season. We thought maybe he'd miss a month, he'd miss a week, he'd miss two. He ain't going to miss any time at all. Fantasy or reality, Shohei Ohtani will hit 40 or more regular season home runs this season.
Yeah, I mean, come on. This is something that Shohei Ohtani is going to do without breaking a sweat. Shohei Ohtani has done this while also being a Cy Young caliber pitcher, right? I mean, Shohei Ohtani getting Cy Young votes, hitting 46 home runs, 44 home runs, and he's done this in seasons where he hasn't even been full-time focused on hitting, and he's done this in lineups, Craig, where, you know, I mean, name the most ridiculous Angels player you can imagine, where Brandon Drury was the lineup protection for Shohei Ohtani. Instead, he's going to be, you know, sandwiched between Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman. Like, there is no escape in this Dodgers lineup. You're not going to be able to try and pitch him low and away. You're going to have to try and strike the guy out, which, if you were going to say, like, one thing that Ohtani is not the best in the world at, it would be that he strikes out about 26% of the time, which is not nothing. Yeah, come on. He's hitting 40 home runs. He might fit. I mean, come on. This guy's going to lead the National League in home runs, in my opinion. We got reality 40 home runs, light work for Shohei.
Yeah, I mean, I think that our question is sort of fair. I guess if I had to redo it and think to myself, if I wasn't like super busy last 48 hours, would I have texted Sam back, you know what, make this number 45, you know, just so we could get Davis to think about it a little bit. But oh, no, you know, Sam says that the line on FanDuel is 39.5, so he did a good job here. That's my bad on that part. All right, so that's the fair line. That is the betting line. I got to go reality, too. I got to go reality also. Yeah, not much to think about here. I think, Davis, you illustrated a couple of things. Like, he has no pitching to worry about. By the way, did you know this about Ohtani? I know you said something earlier, just, you know, for information's sake. Not that you were – it was like a subtle thing. But you said, like, when he takes batting practice, right? Like, you know, and some people think this. Right, he doesn't. He goes under.
He doesn't.
He goes under the stadiums or wherever the cages are. you know, people think like I'm going to go to the stadium and I'm going to get there early to see Ohtani take batting practice. You will never see him do it. I experienced this a couple of years ago. You know, my son's like, I want to go see Ohtani and Trout before the game, right? So he did get Trout's autograph. Trout signed the ball. But he's like, am I going to get Ohtani? I'm like, nah, because he does not come out until the game begins. He just goes to the cages under the stadiums, wherever they are, and that's it. Long story short, good line for Sam. I will go over 39.5 home runs as well. All right, Dylan Cease basically spent the whole entire offseason getting traded, and then he didn't. And then he spent several weeks in spring training getting traded, and then he didn't. And then finally, it's the San Diego Padres of all teams pulling the trigger. Are we sure the Padres, Davis, know what they're doing, by the way, at this point? Like, we have Hader, we don't. We have Snell, we don't. We have Soto, we don't. Like, I don't get any direction as to what's going on with this team. But anyway, Dylan Cease is back there. He's in the NL. Doesn't matter quite like it did in the past with the pitchers not hitting anymore. But ERA of 4 at the end of the season. Fantasy reality for Dylan Cease. He will have an ERA below 4.00 at the end of the season. So when the season completes, his ERA is under 4. Is this fantasy or reality?
I mean, Cease has spent most of his career under this number. He was over this number last year playing for a crappy White Sox team. He gave up more home runs than his average last year. He struck out a little bit lower of a rate of guys than he had in years past. I think he probably does. I mean, really, if anything, just buoyed by that ballpark. You know, he gets to pitch in that massive Petco Park and all of those NL West stadiums. Let's just hope he avoids the 11-run outing, you know, against Colorado in June or whatever when it's 96 degrees there. I got reality. I think he puts up a 3.83 ERA season, probably.
I have fantasy. I would also tell you this, Davis. Would it shock you at all? Just gonna throw it out there. Would it shock you at all that they trade him in like 5 months?
No.
I'm just not sure what direction this team is going, man. Like, and by the way, thinking back on it now, 2 years. Is it 1 year or is it two? It may have been one. You have to verify this for me. Do they just completely regret signing Xander Bogaerts to like $300 million?
Yes.
He's not even playing shortstop anymore. Yeah. Like they could have given that
sure.
to Kim.
For sure.
They gave it to Kim. They gave it to Bogaerts. I don't know. I am very worried about the Padres' season losing as many players as they have after a year of going for it. They've completely pulled it back. I will say fantasy there. Finally, let's get to this one. Mike Trout, healthy, going to open up the season with the Angels without his buddy Shohei Ohtani. Fantasy or reality, Mike Trout, Davis, finishes the season on the Angels.
Man, this one is really hard for me. Obviously, as someone who was so locked in on the Angels for so long and not understanding why they were never any good, despite having Trout and Ohtani, I'll say this. For Michael Trout's sake, he deserves to play in important baseball games. He deserves to get the chance to play in a World Series. He deserves to get, you know, his Game 7 moment before it all kind of goes down. Remember, Mike Trout does have that debilitating, it's some kind of muscular dystrophy injury where he's legally allowed to take drugs that other guys in the league are not allowed to take. So he might not be playing when he's 38, 39 years old, you know, despite having that crazy plate appearance. So he might want to get this done sooner rather than later. He might not want to be a 37-year-old Los Angeles Dodger. So I'm going to say fantasy. I'm going to say he does get traded because they already ripped the Band-Aid off letting Ohtani go. So I think you got to just do it. Yeah.
I think so too. I think so too. Where do you think though? So we'll both say fantasy. I don't know. I don't think it's the Dodgers. I do not think they will allow that.
Rangers. With Ohtani Rangers.
Texas?
Rangers.
Texas? Yeah. I could see that. How about the Mets?
I wanted to say Mets, but they're not doing anything.
Yeah, but that's a Mets move right there, right? Like they're like
it is.
Twiddling their thumbs. Cohen's just like,
trade for the 32-year-old. That's the Mets move. Yeah, you're right.
Let me change directions 3 times in 3 years. We're sellers, we're buyers, we're sellers, we're buyers, we're buyers. Oh my gosh, yeah, could happen. All right, Gray Albright's going to join us next. We'll review that trade with Dylan Cease and also talk about the latest injuries with the Yankees.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. Gray Albright joins us from Razz Ball. The Razz Slam is still going on. I actually got auto-picked last night for the first time since the very beginning. It's not that I'm losing interest. It's just it's getting down to the point I'm not sure it matters, like in the 30th round. But Gray is in New York City for the Tout Wars drafts coming up this weekend. And it was something that I used to really enjoy doing many years ago. And, you know, a couple years ago, just had to say, you know what? I like being warmer and going to spring training in Florida a lot better. But we're not going to give away Gray's secrets for Tout Wars. We are going to review some of the things that happened in fantasy baseball this week. Gray, thanks for coming on the show, Fantasy Sports Today. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good. All right, Gray, so let's start off here. The trade that happened this week, we were just talking about it. I don't know if you were listening. I'm not really sure what the Padres are even doing anymore at this point, but Dylan Cease replaces Blake Snell, I guess, in their rotation. Maybe the way the Padres are looking at this, to me, is let's get him going real good and then we'll trade him again, maybe get some prospects back. I'm not even sure. He's a good pitcher. I don't know that he is an SP1. Some people feel like he is. What do you think going into the season?
Yeah, I mean, this isn't necessarily strictly a fantasy take, but I 100,000% agree with you that the Padres have no real game plan. I'm sorry. People fall over head over heels for Preller, but I don't get what he's doing. Like, guys, how do you go out and trade away Juan Soto for Drew Thorpe and company and then trade Drew Thorpe for Cease? So you're trading Soto for Cease and you buy Bogarts for like $300 million? That doesn't make any sense. Honestly, I think the Padres are completely directionless. I'm sorry to say it because I've been a Padres fan for a long time, but I don't know what they're doing. As for fantasy, you know, with Dylan Cease, I say this on Razz Ball a lot, like this preseason more than ever before. After we saw how the pitch clock rules went into effect, I really think the number one thing is, for starters, you really have to have great command. Like, that's number one for fantasy. Like, you look at, like, the Logan Gilberts, the George Kirby's, the Logan Webbs. Those guys are aces now because they limit base runners. Because now with the pitch clock rules, you put a guy on first, that could be a triple. So you look at Dylan Cease, and man, like, I think probably as recently as 2 years ago, he was an ace. And three, and prior, before the pitch clock rules, he was an ace. But you look at his command, and I just can't get behind a guy who has a 4+ walk per nine. It's just not happening for me. I'm sorry. I think he gets a small boost for fantasy going to San Diego, but I'm out on Dylan Cease in general, where he's going in drafts, because I think he just gives up too many walks.
I think you're probably right about the control point. I mean, there is kind of this, you know, this idea out there in the ether, Gray, that the combination of driveline, just, you know, hammering velocity, 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 velocity all the time, and the pitch clock has kind of just done, honestly, like, irreparable damage to starting pitchers all across baseball. It's why we're going to continue to see instances of John increase. It's why guys who were maybe good before, I mean, you're anyone remember Alec Manoah? Alec Manoah, anyone out there, just you remember Alec Manoah. You definitely don't now, and he's not going to be the only one. But connected to that, we already have one of the best pitchers in baseball, Yankees ace Gerrit Cole, has been informed by a doctor out in California that he, quote-unquote, should be able to return to the Yankees rotation 10 to 12 weeks from now. Now, I've been talking about this with Scott Farrell all week. I mean, if you let me bet at even money right now, if Gerrit Cole is going to have Tommy John surgery, I would definitely take it at even money that he is. Not to say everyone does it. You know, Masahiro Tanaka was able to do this program where he did rest for 10 weeks and came back and was able to pitch. But I mean, come on. He's going to have the surgery, don't you think, Gray?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I feel like that's easy money betting against Gerrit Cole coming back. I think what the case is, they said June or July is when he could return. See, what I understand they're doing is, it makes sense too. Like, you try to rehab until June and July, and if he can't come back, you're not losing. He's out for 2024 and 2025 either way, whether he has the surgery tomorrow or in June or July. So what really harm does it do for the Yankees to let him try and rehab? But I 100% agree that he's going to get to June or July and they're going to be like, yeah, unfortunately, he's going to need Tommy John surgery. I mean, that's just, we've seen this, you know, 99% of the time, this is what happens. You mentioned Tanaka. I can think of also Zach Gallen, but there's very few cases where you have a problem with the pitcher's elbow and they actually return that year and are effective. Like, even if he comes back, he may not look anywhere near himself. I'm telling people that if you have an IL slot, great, stash Gerrit Cole, but you're basically looking at a guy who's not going to be pitching in 2024, unfortunately.
Yeah, and look, if he was still 22 with the Pirates or 25 with Houston or 26, whatever it was, I mean, maybe this is the situation where, Gray, they just tell him to have the surgery and that's it. But as you get older, it's kind of like Verlander. You wait and see as long as you possibly can, and then if you have to absolutely have it, then you do. He is costing himself next year, by the way, if he doesn't do this right now. But indeed, that's kind of the course that they're taking. Okay, so this broke earlier in the week, which was a bit of a surprise, but at least I would say, Gray, drafters had a couple of days, maybe a week, to sort of see that something was going on with Devin Williams. But a lot of people got hurt on draft day, taking him as their number two closer, number three closer overall in fantasy, number five, depending on, you know, what ranking system you used. But he's going to miss time, too, with some fractured issues with his ribs. Going to be out. The Brewers always seem to piece it together somehow. So Piamps, I know, is a name. They have a couple of other guys that are going to fill in. But another story, Gray, of a closer that, you know, unfortunately is going to be a massive overpay, because no matter what you do, like, you take an outfielder at that point, maybe you can find another outfielder. You take a guy just to get saves for you as high as you took Williams. There's really no replacing him. And now you got to use that budget to go get whoever you think the Brewers closer is going to be.
Yeah, no, exactly. There's no real clarity on the Brewers bullpen situation as of this recording. I think McGill or Payamps is probably the move, but they also have Abner Uribe. He's likely, I don't think they're going to go to Uribe because, you know, he's younger and that has, you know, things to do with like arbitration and stuff, you know, boring money situation talk. But yeah, I think probably McGill or Payamps. The Devin Williams thing, just stinks. You know, as far as his, I think it's his back. And, you know, I don't understand, because he had back issues in September of last year. Yeah. I don't know why it took them so long to figure out this injury, because you would think they would have detected this back in September or whatever. I don't, you know, it's just so frustrating for the people who drafted early and that took Devin Williams in, like, you know, the top 50 overall, expecting a number one closer. And now hopefully you get him back by June or July. And I would, you know, the good thing is he comes back, he's the closer. Like, it's not like, well, you know, maybe McGill steals his job. Like, there's not going to be any of that. Like, Devin Williams comes back, he's going to close. It's just a matter of when he comes back. So hopefully it's by June.
And speaking of closers, a move I've actually wanted to see for a long time. It's kind of one of those things where when it finally happens, you're like, why did a bunch of anonymous nerds on the internet know that this was a good idea before the team? But it sounds like Michael Kopech is going to be moved to the bullpen and might even be moved to the actual closing role for the Chicago White Sox. If any of you are not familiar with Mr. Kopech's work, he basically throws the fastest fastball that you can imagine, and he can access it kind of at any time. He can get up to 102, 103, 104 miles per hour. Do you see Kopech succeeding in that role? I mean, obviously there is like a mentality bit that that he has not always excelled. I think there was like rumor that Kopech was going to retire for a little while. He's been as a member of the White Sox, Gray. But do you think that he will end up excelling in this role in the bullpen for Chicago?
Yeah, no, actually, I love the Kopech move to the bullpen. I was in my Razzball rankings earlier in the preseason. I think in my starter rankings when he was still in the rotation, I commented that I wish he were just moved to the bullpen, because that's really where his success has been for his entire career. I mean, you look at a guy who's like in the rotation, he's around an 8.5 to 9.5 K per nine. In the bullpen, he can ramp it up and be close to like a 12 plus K per nine. Like in the bullpen, he could be a number one closer if he gets the job. Unfortunately, the White Sox aren't going to give him a ton of opportunities.
Right.
So you're looking at a guy who's likely going to, I mean, even in the best case scenario, he's maybe looking at like 15 to 17 saves, which is fine. I mean, that's not bad. It should come with great ratios, terrific strikeouts. If he has the mentality to do it, like you mentioned, I think he could be a number one closer. Like next year, we may be looking at Kopech going in like the top 100 overall as a closer if he's able to like show he can do it this year.
Yeah, it should be fascinating. You know, Gray, I was watching, you know, a little bit of that spring breakout real quick. I want to end with this, with Paul Skeens, you know, throwing 100, 101, 102, striking out Jackson Holliday. Is he on like radars for people in the NL only and in the mixed league? Like I still don't see him going particularly high, only because we know he's going to start the season off in the minors with Pittsburgh, but I don't think that's going to last very long. Do you?
No, I don't see it lasting long at all. I've actually been really surprised at how low he's going in drafts, because like previous years, you would see a guy who's like expected to be up by May and he would go in like the 150 range. He's going in, I want to say he's going like 350 overall. Like he's going very late, and he's going to be an ace.
Yeah, no, I mean, it looks like Strasburg all over again. Hopefully not the back end Strasburg, but hopefully the front end Strasburg. All right, Greg, good luck in the Tout Wars drafts this weekend. Really appreciate you coming on. We'll see you again next week as we finalize all of our teams. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
All right, Gray Albright from Razzball joining us as the big drafts industry league, as they would say, drafts going on this weekend. I think I did, I want to say Tout Wars probably like 7 years in a row or 8 years in a row or something like that. So I wish everybody out there good luck with the auctions as well. We'll take a quick time out here on Fantasy Sports Today to kind of give you an idea as to what's coming up next. Kevin Walsh is standing by to give you some game time decisions, get you ready for all the afternoon action in college basketball. And then Coach Young and Scott Farrell take you from that point. We got live programming all throughout the day and throughout the night. And also, don't forget, Bracket Central with the selection show tomorrow night, 7 o'clock Eastern, right here on Sports Grid. We'll be right back with more Fantasy Sports Today after this.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, time for us to wrap it up here on Fantasy Sports Today, but we give you one final thought, 60 seconds of commentary, and here is Davis Maddock to lead us off. It's the Sports Grid 60.
All right, Craig, I'm going to go hyper local with this one, but in my native city of Kansas City, there is a relatively historic moment happening. The first ever in the United States women's only sports stadium has been built, and the first game will be played today by the Kansas City current CPKC Stadium. Seats just over 11,000 people. Of course, our guy Patrick Mahomes and Brittany Mahomes are the co-owners, not only of the team, but of the stadium itself. Season tickets, to the stadium have already been sold. That makes me very proud to be from Kansas City. But I think it's just, you know, we're such a big country, 350 million people roughly here. It's very cool to see these women's sports exclusive stadiums being built. In the NWSL, one of the teams just got sold for $113 million. Kind of insane. And just a nice lighthearted sports story.
Yeah, I appreciate that at the end. This has been a fun week, by the way, not just for fantasy, but for reality as well. On all of our shows here on Sports Grid, the NFL has been the talking point with free agency and all these players changing locations. Davis and I, later in the spring and the summer, of course, will dive into that when it matters as well. It's not really actionable at the moment like fantasy baseball is. But in summary, it is embarrassing that you have players that were not signed in baseball before the football guys got done. I mean, come on. I understand the salary cap, and some teams like Tennessee are being stupid. They have to spend money. Teams got to get up off the floor. I get it. It's a different sport, cap sport. But in the end, my gosh, can we get this fixed? We need our baseball players signed before the football guys. Can't let that happen ever again. That'll do it for the show. Thanks to Patrick, Sam, of course, our producers, for Davis Maddox and Craig Mish. We'll see you back here next week for our next edition of Fantasy Sports Today. Have a great Saturday, everyone. Kevin Walsh is up next.